Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Show topics and guests focus on raising public awareness about local and regional concerns. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. What does it mean to be transgender? Everyone is born with sexual characteristics of male or female, but what if our identity doesn't match the body we're given? Transgender and gender nonconforming people face significant barriers, discrimination, and struggles in every area of life, including family, education, housing, employment, and health care. Currently, there are no clear laws that protect transgender people from this type of discrimination at the federal level. My guest today for a discussion about these and other issues related are Jessica Lynn, activist, parent, and transgender female formerly known as Jeff Butterworth, who lost all of her parental rights due to gender discrimination and has dedicated her life to helping others through their own gender journey. Dr. Elizabeth Meyer, Cal Poly School of Education, and an author of two books on gender and sexuality issues in schools. And Dr. Marcy Bowers will be joining us by telephone from the Bay Area. Dr. Bowers is a pelvic and gynecologic surgeon, viewed as an innovator in the field of transgender surgery and the first trans woman to be performing the surgery. Today's show is live, and you can be a part of our discussion by calling in with your questions or comments. To make sure your comments get on the air, I ask that you please call in early, and the number to call is area code 805-781-3875. And I'm going to see if we've got Dr. Bowers here. Dr. Bowers, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Glad you could join us by phone. And I think the first thing I want to start with, Jessica, is I want to start a little bit with your story, and it's been one that has been a little rocky for you, to say the least. Yes,
my story is long, and I'm not going to do the whole thing. But
right.
You know, I'm 50 years old. I just turned 50 last week, and the father of three children, and my eldest is actually in the studio here, you know, but because I did what I did and I had full cooperation with my children's mother, well, she did a backflip and filed termination papers on me, and because of the backwards court system in the state of Texas, I lost all my parental rights to my youngest child. I'm never allowed to see him, talk to him, email him, call him, just completely. They've even removed my name from his birth certificate. They went to that extent. And the DOJ investigated it, and they said there was huge discrimination, but there's pretty much not a damn thing I can do. You know?
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. And there's a lot to it, but that's basically the gist of it.
I'll add, that is not an uncommon story.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah.
And when you say it's not an uncommon story, it's not uncommon to have a legal go to that extreme to remove parental rights and to kind of disenfranchise a person completely from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what I've seen in the anecdotal stories I've heard, especially when the spouse is not supportive. There are the courts look at transgender persons, especially male to females, as being less than human almost, in that they don't even have the rights of a male who engaged in some egregious act and that was the cause of the divorce. As a transgender person, is like the worst thing you can do. Even in some of what we would call more progressive states, they just transgender persons are looked at not in a very favorable light in many cases.
Let's talk about a little bit for those individuals that are hearing transgender and don't understand what transgender means. Can you please explain that?
Me personally, I knew at the youngest age I can remember, 3-4 years old, that I didn't feel comfortable in my own body.
You were born
boy,
a male.
I was born a male. And at 3, 4, 5 years old, I would pray to God morning, noon, and night to fix me, to turn me into a girl, take these pains away. I would cry morning, noon, and night. It was the most agonizing thing. I never came out to my parents because I'm like I said, I'm 50 years old. And in, you know, I was born in 65. This was unheard of back then. And it's just such a weird feeling saying, I want to be opposite sex. How do you explain that to somebody at 5, 6, 7 years old? Mm-hmm. I took a razor to my penis when I was 7 years old to try to cut it off. When I found the difference between boys and girls, I actually took a razor knife to it and tried to cut it off. And that's to the extreme. You just don't feel comfortable. I mean, it's so hard to explain, but it's so yet so simple, you know? And I don't know.
Marcy, you've been doing transgender surgery for a number of years now.
Yes. Since 2003, correct.
And the majority of the surgeries that you do are male to female?
That's correct. I've done more than 1,300 in a short time, yes.
And is Jessica's story about just knowing, you know, and also your story, too, of just knowing that you're in the wrong... You're in the wrong sex. You're in the wrong body. Is that common?
Yes, in fact, and even though the average age of patients coming for surgery runs somewhere in the mid-40s, I would estimate, the vast majority of our patients, close to 90%, report feeling wrongly gendered in their very earliest of memories. So typically age 4, 5, 6, 3 years old in Jessica's case. You know, I felt that way at age 4. I remember most of my earliest memories were dressed in my sister's clothes and, you know, not. In fact, when President Kennedy was shot, my mother, you know, ran to find me to tell me, and I was in my sister's dress. So
sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's where I was when President Kennedy was shot. It's really hardwired, and we're seeing this. I think this is starting to. You know, people are waking up to this because we now interview young children who are the same kids we were, but we just weren't able to tell our parents that. Or if we did, we were severely punished. Or I know people, you know, sent to obedience school, sent to boarding school, you know, punished severely. You know, it just wasn't something you told your parents. Now these kids, because parents have more acceptance, they're more educated about what's going on, they're listening to their kids, and the kids are coming out, and they're telling the same stories that we were feeling.
Did you
back
ever?
A generation or more ago.
You neither of you mentioned to your parents the feelings in even kind of indirect ways.
No, I never. But see, part of my story is when I mean I personally was never attracted to girls, but you had to play the part. And so I had a girlfriend when I turned 17 years old, and she was 15. And we had started dating, and she was my first girlfriend that I slept with as a boy. 6 months into my relationship with her, I felt it was time to tell her. And I came out, and I said, I want to be a girl. And that's how – she was my best friend. And, of course, she flipped out. But the next day, you know what? I love you. We'll work it out. We spent 4 years together. And I proposed to her, and then December 5th of 1985, a drunk driver hit us and killed her. And my neck was broken. I had some major, major head injuries. And I hit the bottle and the drugs really heavy for about a year and a half. And I came up to my parents' house, and my mom pulled me aside, and she said, both me and your dad known ever since you've been a young child that you want to be a girl. And we actually took you to a psychologist at UCLA, a guy named Money, which has a big history. And it just inadvertently, my parents had taken to him. And he said, he's a boy. You raise him as a boy, and he'll turn out fine. That was the thinking back then. Mm-hmm. But they never brought it up to me on the advice of this psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And they knew. My parents had always known. And, you know.
And so Liz is over here just kind of nodding her head as we're talking about how children know.
Absolutely.
And this is really in your area, Liz, of what you've offered books on. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, well, my research area, I was a high school teacher, and I learned a lot about the experience a lot of students face in school because of gender and sexuality. And so I became really interested in this topic of gender policing that happens in schools, of people being teased or made fun of or excluded for not being enough of a boy or not being the proper kind of girl. And that's how I got into this kind of research. And so more and more, I started being more connected to this community of families who are raising their kids as terms like gender creative, gender independent, gender expansive, gender fluid, transgender, meaning the families are recognizing that their child does not affirm strongly with the identity of the sex they were assigned at birth, but either they are clearly transgender, like yes, asserting what Jessica did in her own self early on, or just saying it doesn't feel right who I am. I feel like my gender doesn't fit into any of these categories. And because they're being affirmed by their families, they're getting a lot more support. But their schools are still really, really dangerous and hostile places. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, is we have some really startling data from our local schools about the experience of students in grades 7, 9, and 11 in our local county really experiencing horrific levels of harassment and exclusion and feelings of being unsafe and even deep, deep feelings of suicide because of this hostility.
Talk about some of those statistics, because I think it speaks to what both Jessica and what Marcy are talking about.
Right. So they're talking about like a lot of like the legal and overt discrimination. But what's hard for the students in the schools is oftentimes it's this very covert, pervasive exclusion and invisibility that causes them to feel unsafe because they're just not talked about. Or if they are, it's as a joke, or people just don't, you know, take their concerns seriously. But for example, students who've missed school because they didn't feel safe, 1% of the average cisgender population, that's a term we use to describe people whose gender identity aligns with the sex assigned at birth.
Right.
So only 1.9% of cisgender youth say they've ever missed school in the past month because they didn't feel safe. But 23%, that's 12 times higher, of transgender youth don't go to school because they do not feel safe there. And that's because
they don't feel physically safe being there.
Right. And they've carried a gun to school. Like 34% of trans youth have carried a gun to school versus 1.5% of cisgender youth. Because they don't feel safe, they feel that's the only recourse they have, is to arm themselves against the people who threaten them, who push them, who shove them, and attack and bully and harass them in other ways.
And we're talking, I want to point out that we're talking here on the Central Coast.
Yes.
We're not talking South LA. We're not talking.
And that is a terrifying statistic, I have to tell you that, as someone who still has a high school student. But, you know, in our day, you know, I was bullied for years, but having not, as much as I tried to conform, to try to be the male that people told me I was, I was very, very, very slight and very, very thin. And because of that, I was considered effeminate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was bullied for years, physically and verbally abused for years.
So, Martin, do you think that had you not been, not identified with being female, you still would have been bullied just because of your slight appearance?
I wasn't out as female at all.
Okay.
Until my late 30s.
So it really was your appearance, and there wasn't anything that you were doing.
There wasn't anything I was doing to be anything feminine at all. Even though I felt that deep down inside, I had hidden that. I did anything I could. I played football. I played with models. I played with trucks and toys and did anything I could to fit in, but it was just simply my physical appearance, because I looked you know, not as boyish or manly as other kids, I was picked on.
Wow. We have a call from Judith here. I'm going to pick up this call and see what she has to say or to ask. Judith, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. Well, knowing Jessica as I do has helped me understand a great deal that I didn't before. But I also want to recommend a novel that won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2003. The name is Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides, and it deals with a girl who becomes later a boy. But it's a wonderful book, and it gives insight that sometimes, you know, people who are unfamiliar with what somebody struggles with for years, what they go through. So I just wanted to recommend the book.
Okay, and thank you. And this show is about education, and that's partly why all three are here today. So thank you for that.
Okay, thanks
all
for
right.
doing the show.
Thank you. So when we're continue with statistics. I know these are probably not pleasant ones. But.
Well, it's difficult ones, and it's ones that we really need to bring to the awareness of families and the education community mm-hmm. because there's a lot of silencing and resistance in schools to talking about LGBT issues because transgender issues is the focus of today. But as Dr. Bowers was just mentioning, it's not just trans people who are impacted by the bullying and the harassment and the gender policing that's happening in schools. And so, you know, 2% of the students in our county identified as transgender on that survey. So that's a pretty large number, and about 5% of the students identified as gay, lesbian, and bisexual. And the gay, lesbian, bisexual students also experience high levels of bullying and harassment. And so the physical dangers that they're experiencing at school, for me, is the most compelling reason why we need to start implementing new laws that have been passed just 3 years ago to prevent bullying and harassment of all youth, but specifically based on sexual orientation and gender identity, and to start teaching about groups that have been marginalized and invisible in the curriculum through the Fair Education Act. And by incorporating the lives and the stories and the experiences and the perspectives of groups that have been excluded from the curriculum, we can try to work against those negative stereotypes, the stigmas. Otherwise, if it's just like, knock it off, don't say that, which is the typical teacher response when they hear name calling, you never get the deeper exploration of where are those biases coming from. How can we create a more safe and inclusive environment? Because otherwise we have these kids suffering internally and doing everything they can. They're resilient. They're strong. They're taking care of themselves. But they're getting hammered on all sides. And we as the adults need to be more affirmative in making sure that our spaces are safe.
One of the responses that I have heard from people is when you're describing, you know, a sexual confusion, if you will, for people who were young and in school is, gee, that's normal. You know, it's not abnormal to not really know. You know, there's an unfamiliarity, there's an exploration period, and why really make a big deal out of it? Because aren't you really forcing the issue?
Well, because if you don't talk about it, then people are only limited to the two choices that they've been presented with their whole life, that boys grow up to be men who marry women, and girls grow up to be women who marry men. And there's lots of people whose identities and experiences are way outside of that really narrow path. And if we don't have stories that talk about it, if we don't hear about role models, if we don't learn about the history, then if you're not present in the school curriculum, if you can't read about yourself or see yourself there, then you learn you don't matter. And that's the way that depression and suicidality take hold, because you feel that you're invisible and nobody cares because you don't really exist.
Is suicide a higher percentage in this population?
Oh, it's extremely
high. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's in the youth in the survey, it was twice as high. For about 19% of the average adolescents reported having seriously contemplated trying suicide, whereas it was 41%, almost half of trans youth have seriously considered attempting suicide.
And for the parents, you know, that you're seeing, you know, Jessica, with individuals that you've worked with in your support, and also Do you find that their parents really understood or tried to learn what was different? Is there any education that needs to happen for parents?
There's a lot of education that needs to happen for
everybody.
Okay.
Absolutely.
When my big thing is okay, when I first had my surgery done by Marcy, I went in and I wanted to live in stealth. All right. It just didn't happen. My case came out, it kind of put me in and I said, the hell with this. And I started going out. And my thing is I started at Hancock College going in and talking to human sexuality classes about me, my life, my transition, and it's blossomed. I go into a class. I was in her school the other day. I go in, and I told you I got an email from UCLA this morning, wants me to go out to UCLA. I go in there and I explain to these students that this is what it does. And I say to them, I mean, let's say there's 100 students in there, and I said, two or three or four of you, one day you're going to have a child come to you and say, hey, mom, I want to be a boy, or hey, mom, I want to be a girl, or dad, or uncle, and you're going to remember this, and we're opening up your eyes. And this is my way of education, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how I reach people. I go to the high schools, I go to the colleges, I've done it in churches. My way of educating, and then most people say, I get it, you know, and I'm there for any type of question, you know, mm-hmm. and it helps open up. Everybody has a different thing, but education is our number one. It's the fear factor. Everybody is just scared of this, you know.
Well, and the parenting influence is huge. Research out of San Francisco shows in the Family Acceptance Project that if you have affirming immediate family members, your health and mental health outcomes are far better, even with all the hostility and discrimination you can face around you. But if you are protected and supported in the home, it is a huge protective factor for particularly LGBT youth.
So how educated are the teachers in the schools? Because you talked about three laws, and those laws actually also include what needs to happen within the school system to be supportive, correct?
Yes.
Which would have to come from the teachers as a critical part.
Right. And I can tell you any Cal Poly grad in the past 3 years is very well educated on the topic. But most teachers who graduated from their teacher credential program before these laws were passed, there was nothing. And so this is part of the resistance and the difficulties in actually implementing these laws. If you're a history teacher who now has to talk about LGBT history and the history of people with disabilities, yet that was never included in your own education, it requires your own initiative to go find a book or go educate yourself. And then that's a lot of extra time that many teachers don't have. And if you're not personally motivated, then oftentimes it's not going to happen because there's Common Core and new testing and all these kinds of things about school funding. So it seems like there's always something else that's more important. But I just try to tell them these are the lives of your students. Literally, you can save a child's life if you just do these things, talk in more inclusive ways and educate yourself and create an affirming and inclusive environment.
Maybe can I give just one example? This is a little off subject, but following up on the education piece is, you know, it sort of helps people understand. One of the objections we get to the issue of transgender is that people will say, "Well, God made you a boy, or God made you a girl," and we look at genitalia, and we expect gender identity to follow what the genitalia shows, but genitalia formation is actually very, very complicated. And there are many biological examples where we are not born necessarily male nor female in the genital region. In fact, almost one in 2,000, which is actually quite a large number when you're looking at obstetrics or delivering babies, as I did for many years, that's a large number of the population that were actually born intersexed, or the old term would be hermaphrodite,
mm-hmm. Meaning they would have
disorders of sexual development. Mm-hmm. But in other words, not necessarily a penis, not necessarily a vulva or a vagina. There are many examples in between, and so even nature shows us that even genitalia formation is punctuated by diversity. So when you get into that notion of gender identity, which is how you see yourself, how your brain sees yourself as male or female, it really is not surprising that there are people that do not necessarily feel male nor female. And of course, this newer generation is even taking that to another, you know, even beyond that, and they're almost looking at gender identity and gender as an a la carte menu.
Yeah.
Where they're beginning to say, well, you know, I like my breasts, but you know, I kind of like a little facial hair and a deeper voice. Or you name it, you know, or the pronoun issue. You know, I don't like she, I don't like he, I would rather be known as they. You know, they're pushing our concept of gender and gender roles and gender expectations to a whole other realm, which I think is actually healthy.
Yeah.
It's an expansion of the human mind. It's the last frontier.
Well, I think it was really interesting when Facebook included 58 different genders, drop down menu. It really breaks out. Now, individuals would say, gee, that's like splitting atoms also, but it speaks to what you're talking about, which is really looking at things in very diverse ways, and it isn't just a black or a white. It really is looking at all different shades on the spectrum and being able to select from a menu that is pretty much endless.
And we have to be taught to think that way. I mean, we've been taught to think in binaries because of the way our culture has structured things. You're either gay or you're straight, or you're man or you're female, you're black or you're white. And more our generations and the younger generations clearly are learning to think outside of those boundaries and saying there's actually all kinds of possibilities that go well beyond these limiting binaries.
Yeah. Now, for both you, Jessica and Marcy, both of you married women.
Yeah.
Right?
And yes.
Both of you transition male to female. And Marcy, you're still married.
I'm still legally married, but I would call it. We have a modern family. There's no question. But
yeah.
I have another partner. But I guess I'm maybe one of the first quadrisexuals in the fact that
oh my gosh, now I need to learn a new definition, damn it.
Well, you can take it where your imagination will carry it, but I'm not going to embarrass myself by giving too many details. But let's just say I've been around the block a few times.
But, you know, unlike the two of you, I mean, you've got similarities and differences, and Jessica, you do not have a good ex relationship with your ex, and yet for you, Marcy, you have been able to at least maintain an amiable relationship,
challenges, but we married for a reason, and so that it is a strain on the people around you to transition because their relationships and their what they saw you before, it changes, and it really does rock people's world.
Well, I would imagine it would have to rock how they see themselves too.
Well, like with.
Absolutely.
Just like you said right there, that was my biggest thing with when I did my transition. She knew of it. I have a court documentation that she knew before we ever started dating that I had this issue. You know what I mean? And so it was
shouldn't have been a surprise.
It wasn't. It was her thing to say because I finally came through and said, I'm having my sex change. Yeah. Originally, she had said, I'm making plans with you to go to Colorado to meet Marcy and to go to also meet Meltzer in Arizona. I had flown to Marcy alone, and I said, that's, you know, she was with me. But then when her own stature was coming into it, she's F you, you know, this is, you know, No. And I thought, you know, I had kept it together for so long. And again, but my attraction isn't towards that. It was a double-edged sword, if that's what you want to say.
Yeah.
You
know, and, so I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices. If you just joined us and would like to hear this show in its entirety, you can go to our website at kcbx.org and use the drop-down menu for news talk and click on the Central Coast Voices and listen to our most recent show. We're talking about the broader topic of gender issues, and more specifically, we're talking about transgender today. Certainly a much broader topic is available for other shows. The voices with me today are my guests, Jessica Lynn, Dr. Elizabeth Meyer, and Dr. Marcy Bowers. We have about a half hour left in today's show, and there's still time for your questions and comments. You can bring your voice into our discussion at 805-781-3875. And we have a couple of callers, so I'm going to get to Lisa here. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did you have a comment or question?
Yes. First of all, I wanted to mention that I'm vice president of an organization called Trans Youth Family Allies, or TYFA, and we are an organization that's designed, it's very grassroots, been around for quite some time, meant to support families and especially parents when they have young children who experience gender differently than we might imagine or that would be stereotypically demanded. And we have been one of the go-to sources to get that kind of support and education, including going into communities and providing resources for schools and community services for kids that have this type of experience.
And where are you located, Lisa?
Well, we're actually incorporated in Holland, Michigan, but we're pretty much spread out across the country. I'm actually in Santa Barbara, California.
Okay.
And but we, you know, we have a web-based presence at imatyfa.org or imatyfa.org. And you can make contact and get contact with other families who are dealing with the same thing through that website and access educational services and such through there.
Are you finding that there's an upsurge in people reaching out for this kind of support?
I'm not sure that I would. I mean, we've always had a fair amount of attention or you know, people, let's say, pressure on our site to provide the services that we would like to provide everybody. There's mm-hmm. been certainly a great deal of we actually were started by three families or three mothers, really, who had children that really could use this and the families that could use this kind of support. So they kind of got together. And once they got together and got some, attention for what they were doing, the response was pretty overwhelming at first. So it took a lot to get everything in place to be able to handle the amount of attention that came down. Has there been a greater uptick in that type of activity? I'd say, I can't argue that. I mean, we still do conferences at different places. We're at Gender Odyssey, which is a gender conference in Seattle this past August. And, I mean, our conferences, our workshops are just as full as they've ever been.
Great.
So, yeah, and a lot of it's, you know, we have one workshop where we try to wrestle with everyone's fears. It's called the Top 10 Fears. And those are very well attended, and there's a lot of communication back and forth with people who are just trying to get a grip on it with their children or have already had quite a bit of experience. So this weekend, in fact, we'll see the first of I can't remember exactly the title of this organization. It's not TYFA, but it's more local. Trans Youth Zone. I can't remember exactly what it is, but its first meeting will be this weekend. And I can tell you, after living in this area for maybe 30, 40 years, I've not seen that kind of energy to bring a group of families and youth with their kids come in and have time with each other and so forth. I've never seen that before until just now. So that could be an indicator of...
And Liz was going to respond to that, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some excellent national and even statewide organizations like Gender Spectrum based in the Bay Area that are providing support and advocacy directly for families. And actually here in the Central Coast, we started what's called the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools that's meant to pull together all these different youth-serving and educational-oriented agencies to help implement these new laws, to help make sure schools have are safe and supportive places and that families can get connected to resources like TYFA and Gender Spectrum and other kinds of supportive and affirming organizations. And so we do have local resources as well.
Great. Great.
Yeah, Liz, I wanted to mention also on that, because you mentioned the laws and the demand for education in schools, I think also, and I you may have some contact with this group, but of course Pacific Pride Foundation here in the Santa Barbara area is advocating very strongly for that to try to get it implemented, because there is a resistance to It's more of a passive resistance. It's not like I'm not going to do it. It's just that, as somebody said earlier, teachers have a great deal of difficulty incorporating a new thing
new
that
curriculum.
They had not had contact with before. So trying to get that awareness and get the idea that it is really, it's a dictate of the law, and to have people conform, it's been a bit of a struggle. But I think PPF, our certainly Pacific Pride Foundation here in our area,
I just did a study actually this past year where I worked with teachers to identify what were some of the challenges, and it's posted on my website, ElizabethJMeyer.com, and it was, we did focus groups with teachers, and basically they're like, we don't have curriculum from the state, we don't have textbooks, the new standards are being updated this year, and so until any of that is changed, I have enough on my plate right now, I'm not going to change my curriculum until I have more top-down support.
My question is, how do we overcome religious objections to all of this?
Gee, do you think that has a factor?
Oh, yes.
I wanted to say two more quick things. I'll get off. One thing is we are trying to plan a trans day of visibility or awareness. It's actually not going to be just a day, and we hope to have maybe a 2 or 3 day event. We would like to ask. We've already asked a number of people, and I do intend to get in touch with Marcy Bowers again to see if she wants to be involved in this in some way. It could be a cool thing.
Okay,
down
but you're
in the central area, and Elizabeth might be something you and I might want to talk about too, because we don't have to be just Santa Barbara focused. I mean, it could be broader focused. So,
Lisa, I'm going to ask you to call back after the show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will do that.
All right.
And also, I just wanted to say that. I am a big fan of Marcy Bowers. She does such excellent work, and I couldn't endorse her.
Oh.
That's nice.
With that, I'll get off.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. I'm so glad you guys
Thank
are doing
you.
It.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah. And we have, so your question, Marcy, was how does religion play into it, and how would you answer that?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I mean... What I tell all my patients, and you know, when they indicate that their parents are very religious, therefore they don't accept. I'm like, if your parents are religious, they should be the most accepting. I mean, if there's anything that the Bible teaches, it is to love unconditionally. And so I think in my opinion, religion should be at the forefront of advancing. Rights for GLBT persons, not behind it as they are. And so what's happened is that the lofty goals of religion have been hijacked by people who now use it as a shield to cloak their bigotry, and that's really a shame. They're hiding their fears and their bigotry. Are hiding behind the Bible, and that is, or other religion, and that's really a shame.
And that, so that's something that you're seeing a lot of.
I do, yeah. I see patients who, you know, again, whose family members have rejected them, and they say, oh, it's because of religion, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, mm-hmm. and we hear, you know, we don't believe in birth control. It's because of my religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that religion is against simply on the basis of quote unquote beliefs.
Is it possible that religion is just an excuse for an inability to accept?
That's straight off. Yeah.
You know, well, and it's just, often used in schools. Like, we don't want to offend the sensibilities of our conservative religious families by talking about these issues that might go against their religious value system.
Yes.
But, you know, a law is a law, and non-discrimination is non-discrimination. You're allowed to have your personally held religious beliefs, but not at the expense of other people's rights to exist.
Absolutely.
So let's.
They should have no role in policy. You know, religion should not be a part of policy.
To override it.
One of my things, in my case, like in Texas, the judge ordered that I have an evaluation done by the court's appointed evaluator, Dr. Ben Albritton, located in Dallas, Texas. while I was flying to Texas to have my evaluation done by this guy, an attorney for the ACLU in New York read about my case and said, do not use this guy. He's a right-wing theology professor. My attorney's all, it's too late. Nothing against right-wing or left-wing, but you go into his office in a downtown Dallas building, and all it was is pictures of Jesus on the cross. His other job was a theology professor. And here he was, and his thesis was that basically God will cure the homosexual population. And this is who the courts chose. And he even came on my side and said, you know what I'm saying, after all this kind of stuff. But they do. They use religion as a scapegoat. And that really, really is. Because truly, just like Marcy said, if you're truly religious, you're accepting of anybody. And it's just, it's nothing but their hatred, and they use it, you know? I mean, no ifs, ands,
or misunderstanding or fear.
It's fear. Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is.
I think misunderstanding is a huge amount of it. Because I know when I work with the students and future teachers, they the more they hear personal stories, the more they're given the opportunity to understand the biology and the sociology and all the things about identity development. Their minds are just like, that makes sense. Of course, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
You know, I always throw one of my favorite religious quotes back at people who use that, and I say to them, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. Because I've had it happen a few times where I've had very, very conservative families come to me, and they go, and they, several, especially when living near Colorado Springs where there are a lot of fundamentalist churches. And I had one couple bring their 17-year-old, it was a male becoming female, and they said, you know, she was so angry, so hate me. She so much self-loathing. So she was so unhappy for all these years. We tried to normalize her gender, tried to get her to be a boy, but it just didn't work. And we finally came around, and that's why we're here now. And what they said to me is at the end. So in other words, someday, you never know, you may have yourself a GLBT son or daughter. Mm-hmm. You may know someone who's GLBT. But they said to me at the end of that interview, thank God you're here.
Mm.
And these are the most conservative of conservative people you've ever met.
Well, it sounds like they love their daughter.
Ultimately, that's what it came to. They realized they wanted a happy child.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say there, but for the grace of God go I, that means, you know, it's easy to judge when it doesn't affect you or you don't have a family member like that. But when it affects you, and look at Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, who have a transgendered child.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Warren Beatty. And, I mean, there are people, it's easy to judge until you have a child of your own. And then you realize that it's real. You realize that these kids are truly unhappy the way they were born. And there's only one answer.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to clarify, too, that not all individuals do a transition from one sex to another.
That's right, through
surgery.
No.
So, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, too. That's choice, but that choice doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, correct?
Yeah, there's several support groups here in the Central Coast. We just started one called Your True Gender, and we have Trans Central Coast, Trans Tuesdays. There's a lot of groups out here. Not everybody. I was lucky. I was able to afford it. A lot of people, and now with the, you know, Marcy will talk about the health care and all that kind of stuff. I was able to afford it. A lot of people, it's a huge amount of money. I've spent over $100,000 on my surgeries on my face, on my body, and my whole nine yards now. But a lot of people can't do that. A lot of people are comfortable with their own. Who cares? Who cares what you have between your legs and what's, you know, whose business is that of anybody?
Because it's not about sex.
No, it's just about your mind. It's what you are, you know, and it's just
Yeah, and more youth just want to be treated in the gender identity that they have. And right. So they tell them the gender pronouns, the gender neutral pronoun they. They want to be perceived as more gender fluid or androgynous. They don't want to be assumed to be feminine or assumed to be masculine. They want people to treat them as they see themselves. And that's what it's really about, is being able to have others see you the way you see yourself. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean having to transition or having to go through a medical transformation, but it just means letting the world know, this is who I am, and I want you to respect me and see me and recognize me for all of who I am.
It also doesn't mean that necessarily if there's a marriage in place that that marriage stops either.
No,
in all cases.
Not at all.
No. I know quite a few people that are still married, and their wives are very supportive, or their husbands are very supportive, whatever. You know what I mean? So it is.
And
it
people
is,
realize love is love, yeah. Right? And
but with
bodies
me,
can do all
yeah.
kinds of amazing things regardless of, you yeah. know, how you identify.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with me it was a little bit different, but, you know, that's me.
Well,
know.
We're going to take a call here from Rick. Rick, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I wanted to contribute something that I think might help everyone. And that is one of the oldest cultures in the world, and their spiritual tradition teaches that we are all both male and female, that our right side of our body is male, the left side is female. And they exercise from infancy both sides of the child's being. So they get positive reinforcement for both their male and female side, with the idea of being to create a balance between the two. And they continue that right up into adulthood.
And what culture is this?
It's the ancient French Basque culture.
And there's other wonderful examples of Two-Spirit in Native American traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's other cultures, you know, the Hijras in India. And other cultures and other periods of time where gender and sexuality had far different definitions than we do now.
Right.
But this aspect of maleness and femaleness and there being gender diversity, it has existed throughout history, and there are many examples that can be pointed to. But I think it just points out the fact that really looking at gender more as a continuum rather than two completely distinct entities is probably so much more healthy for the evolution of the planet.
Yeah, one of the things I try to get my students to do is to stop saying the opposite sex,
mm-hmm.
to change their way of thinking about binaries, of just saying you could be attracted to somebody of a different sex,
mm-hmm.
or a different
mm-hmm.
gender. And that just begins just shifting the paradigm slightly of when you think opposites, automatically your brain goes to binaries and extreme poles. And if you just think different, then it automatically helps you think more among spectrum pluralities, lots of different possibilities.
When you're talking about the three laws, and thank you, Rick, for bringing that.
Can I say something else?
Yes, go ahead.
I think that one of the primary things that I got from that French Basque teaching is that one needs to learn how to accept their full selves. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems in our culture is that it's an either-or type of thinking. And there's not that permission for males to feel their feminine side or for females to feel their masculine side. And I think that if there was more of a broadening, more of an understanding of how we really are inside, and I think this is reinforced by scientific studies that have shown that the right and left sides of the brain actually do have these two characteristics. You know, the left side is, the right side of the brain, which corresponds to the left side of the body, is the open, intuitive, receptive side, and the left side is the aggressive, male side, which corresponds to the right side of the body. And the other thing also I think I wanted to mention is that in one of the hallmark anthropological studies that was done by Margaret Mead, which is called Coming of Age, she wrote this book, Coming of Age in Samoa, And what she found is that up until about the age of 19, most of the girls she studied, and I think she was studying primarily girls, had more sexual relations with their own sex than with the opposite sex. And yet, in that society, and I don't know how they dealt with males, but in that society, there was not an abnormal number of homosexual identities as adults. So it was just normal. So you would think that if there was that much lesbian activity, that there would be a lot more lesbians in that culture, but that didn't turn out to be the case. Mm-hmm. So even to the extent of acting out those impulses, that if there's an openness of mind and the willingness to accept both, things kind of go into balance, you know.
Okay. Naturally. Well, thank you, Rick.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I love the discussion of biology because sort of little thought of fact is that everyone starts out anatomically female. And are you there?
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Describe. Sorry, I lost everyone there.
No. In utero. Talk about the utero.
You have us in your rapt attention.
Well, we know in obstetrics that you cannot tell the sex of a baby in the uterus until halfway or more through pregnancy, and only then can ultrasound see that there's a penis or right. a vulva. And that's because there is the in the process of embryology in the evolution of the genitalia, everyone starts out female, and then there are some signals and hormonal impulses that direct male fetuses to undergo a process of fusion, where the labia majora fuse, and the ovaries that start from the genital ridge, as the testicles do, the testicles drop through the inguinal ring and become testicles, and the clitoris elongates and becomes a penis. And then, of course, the urethral tube zips up. In fact, you can look at every male child on the underside of the genitalia, and you can see the scar mm-hmm. where everything fused. And this is where the basis of these intersex conditions comes in. There are biological conditions that stop that process along the way. And all of this is the basis of my surgery. So the other notion that brings up is the fact that that men and women both have estrogen and they both have testosterone in different amounts. And then in terms of genetics, we're actually amazingly similar. There's a concept called sexual dimorphism, which measures the degree of genetic difference between the sexes. And it turns out that human beings actually are very, very, very close. There's less than 3% difference in their genetic material between men and women.
And there's even been psychological research that affirms that, where it's a gender similarities hypothesis, where you look at men and women across their attitudes and their behaviors over life, and there's very few actual distinct differences that have a magnitude that really show there's an explicit difference between the population of males and population of mm-hmm. females, that overwhelmingly we're more similar than we are different.
Which would take back that whole concept of opposite. There is no opposite.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just we all are all.
Exactly.
Right.
In fact, many other species have more sexual dimorphism than human beings do.
Isn't that fascinating? That's amazing. I'm going to take a real quick call here from Ariana. Ariana, are you there?
Yeah.
Did you have something real quick? I got a minute.
Yeah, I was just going to tell Jessica, congratulations. Jeff's been telling me everything that's been going on, and I'm so proud of you. And doing what you're doing, and I miss you, and I love you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Love you too.
That's a little shout out to Jessica. All right.
Feel the love.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're doing that I want to pout out is this. Me and Marcy are working together on a big thing this coming October at Cal Poly, we're putting together a conference, a three-day conference of surgeons. Dr. Bowers is going to present, and Dr. Beck, Dr. Meltzer has now agreed to come, Dr. James Thomas, the vocal surgeon. And we think we've got the okay now from Jameson Green, is part of the Transgender Law Center, is coming in. It's going to be a three-day event in October here at Cal Poly, and it's open up to amazing amount of people. I mean, it's just, it's huge what we got putting together.
That's fantastic.
You know, and, you know, so a big shout out for that. And you can find out all the information on yourtruegender.org, which is our new website. And, you know, you can find out about it. So we're in the process of putting it together. We have a big meeting tomorrow. So,
and all of the individuals that are on today's show, too, have a lot of information about the work that they've done, about the research, about their own life stories, and about what they're doing to further information about today's topic and much broader than today's topic on the internet. On, you know, there's been, Marcy, for you, the movie, you've been in a number of different special shows. Trinidad is Trinidad, Colorado, where you used to practice before you moved to the Bay Area. There's a documentary on that that is a good documentary, actually, very good. Very fascinating, and you were actually practicing in a very small town in Colorado that tended to be very conservative.
That's where I had my surgery.
And that's where you had your surgery, Jessica. And then also there was a, was it a BBC special, Marcy, that was done, a six-part series?
That was, yes, through the BBC, correct. Yeah. Uh-huh. And Discovery Health also aired, the WE Network also aired that as well. But yes.
And just doing the research for today's show, there's so much misinformation out there that can be clarified. And I think, you know, having gone to different websites, gone to different information, Jessica sharing information about your life, your story, and also giving me links, educating ourselves and really just doing it from a place of curiosity rather than a place of opinion.
Right.
Boy, what a difference it would make in setting a standard for young people to also approach their own lives from a place of curiosity, too, rather than condemnation.
Absolutely.
That's one of my number one reasons why I offer myself to go to any college. I've been going up and down the state. You know, from Northern California to Southern California, I'll go across the nation. If Texas calls me and says, come to my school, I will go there and I'll talk to any college class, any high school class, anything to help educate. This is it.
Yeah, and in the wake of our report, I've offered free consulting to all of the local school districts. If they ever really want information and support, I will make sure that finances are not a reason for a school not to do this. And we also at Cal Poly on February 21st, we're offering a workshop at the Change the Status Quo conference, where we're working with local youth, LGBT youth and allies, to develop some leadership and empowerment among our community members to really work further on these issues. So you can find that information on my website as well, elizabethjmeyer.com.
And I want to thank my guests today.
And we also do that. We're able to get to colleges and universities around the country as well. And our website, marcybowers.com, also has some nice information.
I want to thank my guests today, Jessica Lynn, Dr. Marcy Bowers, Dr. Elizabeth Myers, and the listeners who called in with questions and comments. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Your suggestions for future show topics are always welcome. Next week on Voices, please join Fred Monroe. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you very much for joining us for today's topic.